Representative Burt, what they did when they drafted LCMS 2361-1, there was concerns about definitions. They redefined some of the sections and they moved sections around. So that one section, section 4, is now section 1.
Section 1,
section
sub 4.
Section 1, sub 3.
Sub 3.
Okay, I just want to make sure, I guess, if we're going to adopt amendments, can we move his over this one? So
sure.
Understand then. Matter of cut and paste.
Okay, thank you. Did you have another question? Representative
yes.
Peterson.
Mr. Chair, I think I am going to ask briefly what mm-hmm. the Burns-Cosgrove amendments do. If you would
okay.
go through that
yeah,
again,
I,
please.
Yeah, it will only take a minute.
Okay.
The Brewer case involved a junior lien on a vendee's interest. In other words, the buyer of the property on a contract borrowed some money and put a trust deed, or I don't remember what it was, but some form of a lien against his vendee's interest. This is a very common thing, for instance, with weatherization loans. It's done all the time. The Oregon Real Estate Bar has always assumed that a lien on a vendee's interest would be treated the same as a junior lien on a trust deed, a junior lien on a fee title interest, that there would really be no difference. In other words, it'd be treated the same as a second trustee would be where there's a senior trustee. The Brewer case in the Court of Appeals was decided the way that all the majority of the real estate bar thought was appropriate. But then it went to the Supreme Court and was reversed. And the Supreme Court held that if a vendee abandons his interest and gives a quitclaim back to the seller, that automatically wipes out all the junior interest without any notice, without any remedy whatsoever. And as whether that was the right law or not doesn't matter. It creates a horrible practical problem because there are so many junior liens on vendee's interest floating around in the state of Oregon.
Thank you.
I think I asked you this question before, but if you could refresh my memory on the effective date, if this will go to any contracts currently in existence.
That's right, any existing contract, so that we solve the problem with all the junior liens that are floating around out there right now.
Representative Springer.
I want to be brief on this, but this forfeiture remedy, I understand the purpose of this, and according to the Brewer decision, is to try to be a little bit more specific in terms of what the rights and responsibilities are, the purchaser as well as the seller, when that remedy is exercised. And I think this provides just a little bit clearer understanding what those rights are. Forfeiture, I think, is a remedy that's not terribly favored. I think we understand why it exists, of course. I'm curious, how come some of the detailed notice provisions were taken out, or the requirements in terms of exhausting, if you will, certain types of efforts required to contact the purchaser to ensure that they have notice of what's about to happen?
The reason was not to make it so that there would be less notice given, but was because of the constitutional problem of trying to define what constitutes good notice. We have this same exact language in our trust deed bill, and it was a first draft attempt to try and provide a safe harbor where if you went through certain steps, X, Y, and Z, you would know that you'd given adequate notice for due process purposes. Other members of the bar, when they reviewed that, pointed out to us that it would never withstand the constitutional test, which is that you have to give whatever notice in the circumstances is most likely to actually notify all of the relevant parties. And if you define an XYZ type of process, that might work in one situation, but in another situation, there might be some additional person that you could give notice to that you know about. And the courts would say, constitutionally, you have to do that. You have to give whatever notice is most likely to actually get the person notified. So if you know that Aunt Emma is living down the street three houses, and that you know you could get notice that way, then you're going to have to do it. So by taking that language out, we've actually reverted back to the more strict constitutional standard you know, it was very clear to us when we thought about it that trying to create a safe harbor was just not going to work.
Okay, I appreciate that intent and putting that on the record, and thank you.
Okay.
Further questions? Chair is willing to accept the motion for the amendments.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Peterson?
I would move the amendments, Burns-Crosco amendments 510 sub 2, and also the grant amendments dated 430, no, dated 517 sub 2, to House Bill 2361.
Representative Peterson moves the amendments, the Burns-Cosgrove, as well as the grant amendments to House Bill 2361. Discussion? Is there any objection? They're adopted.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2361 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Peterson moves House Bill 2361 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Clerk will call the roll, please.
Donnie?
Aye.
Bunn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye.
Betsy?
Aye. Motion carries. House Bill 2649.
Council. I might say I brought with me to the hearing today a short letter summarizing how the amendments fit together and the purpose of those amendments just in one page. The previous letter I sent was quite lengthy, and I don't know if you've had an opportunity to review it, so the legal counsel to the committee suggested that I bring you a short summary.
Okay. We have that. Is that the one dated?
It should be dated today, I believe.
May 17, okay. You want to review this letter for the committee? Or Representative Springer?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, before we get into that, I just want to, I don't know if I discussed this with all members of the subcommittee, but I believe I had a conversation directly or indirectly with representatives of the bar, and I don't know if Mr. Grant, we had discussed this specifically, but I had some concern about the notice provisions in Section 4, and it appears on page 4 of the statement in the Hannah Gross version. I think I indicated to the sponsors that I would be moving to delete the change in the language, which, as I understand it, limits in any publication the information that's provided regarding reinstatement information provisions, etc. So I'd like to make sure that's clear before we get into the other amendments.
Right. We have no objection to that. The only reason for the change was because the people who are interested in reinstatement are not the ones that read the newspapers anyway. So we just felt it was a way to economize. But we have no objection if you have some reason to.
Representative Springer, if I could ask then, there would be no need for having Section 4 in the bill, is that correct?
Well, now we're talking about, it's Section 5 of the printed bill, Section 4 of the engrossed bill that we have before us. So I believe that's correct, except there is a language change down in Sub 3,
yeah, three.
Which changes the language on or before, and there's a substantive change there. So we may want to include that change. I don't care about that portion, and that's fine to leave that change as in the printed bill.
Because they just got the translation. 2998. Okay. I'm sorry. Different bill. Had a quick hearing, I guess. Do you want to, how do you want to proceed, Mr. Grant? Do you want to go through your letter? Do you want to go through the amendments?
I think the letter should be satisfactory. If you have any questions beyond that letter, I'd be happy to answer them. But if you just want to take a moment to read that letter,
yes, we'll just have a chance to go through this.
Mr. Chair, I just have a quick question for council.
Certainly.
Kind of a procedural question. When this goes down to LC to screen it, are they necessarily going to accept what we've suggested as a new major summary, or are they going to look at that and decide whether or not they want to rewrite that major summary themselves?
Correct, that last one.
Okay.
Yeah, what I gave you was just a suggestion, because it was, they had left in the old one, which was incorrect.
Thank you.
Could I ask Mr. Bronner a question, please? I've aged quite a bit during the session. I know it looks like it. Do you have a copy of this letter that you could look on that bottom paragraph there? Did the House already do that in terms of the trustee situation for in-house counsel? Financial institutions may act as trustees.
Mr. Chairperson, I'm Frank Bronner with the Oregon Bankers Association. No, you have not.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Now, why don't we operate off of the hand and growth version? And Representative Springer, why don't I recognize you for your change?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In Section 4 of the hand engrossed version, or the retyped engrossed version, which accompanies the May 17th letter to which Mr. Brandis made reference, which is on page 4 of the bill, in subsection 2, or section 2 of 86.750, I would move to delete the new language that appears there, beginning with the words for publication and ending with the words prior to sale.
Okay.
End of quote.
And then, if I should ask in sub 3, Mr. Grant, is there a need for that language change?
Yes, there is. It's an independent change.
Okay. So there would be a need for section 4 in the bill. And is there any objection to Representative Springer's motion to delete the new language in subsection 2 of section 4? It's adopted. Are there, Mr. Council?
Mr. Chairman, would you like me to go over a little bit four sets of amendments we have on this bill?
Yes.
I think Mr. Grant has done an excellent job of summarizing what all four amendments do in the second paragraph of his letter of May 17. Originally, the Oregon State Bar Real Estate section proposed LC Amendments 2649-1, which would have deleted the entire bill and revised most of the sections. In addition, we have two sets of amendments from the Oregon Bank Association and U.S. Bank Corps and U.S. Savings Bank, which deal with trustees, and they're designated 2649-2 and 2649-3. As it relates to the original set of amendments, 2649-1, we would probably have to add a new section, at least for one set of amendments. The last set of amendments, 2649-4, are again from the bar, and they replace part of the original amendments from the bar 2649-1. They rewrite sections
7, 8
of the original LC 2649-1. If the committee chooses to adopt all the amendments, I will resolve any conflicts and differences with legislative council.
President Bond.
Mr. Chairman, I move we adopt all the amendments and have our council resolve all the conflicts with legislative council.
Is there a date certain on that?
President Bond, which do you mean by all?
Here's what I mean.
Okay.
2649-1, 2649-2, 2649-3, and 2649-4.
Okay. Now, is it your intent that we should bring these back to subcommittee to look at these, or do you want to look at these in full committee?
I would defer to the chair's preference on that.
Thanks, Representative Bond. Representative Springer?
Rocky, how long do you think it's going to take to get these ready?
Probably no sooner than next Wednesday.
Well, I, at this point in the session, I appreciate the fact, I think Mr. Grant and I think Councilman Rocky will have adequate opportunity. I'm sure that because this is an important area of the law where any errors are going to wreak real havoc upon the parties who are before us, I'm sure it's certainly in their interest to make sure it's technically correct. So I'm going to certainly agree, I think, with the procedure that would allow it to go to full committee, subject to that kind of scrutiny, and then rather than delay it by bringing it back to subcommittee, unless there's some strong feeling otherwise.
That's a good approach. I think maybe the members of the subcommittee, if possible, if we could get a copy of the LC amendments prior to the full committee work session at our offices so we could review those before we come to full. May be better prepared. Representative Bunn has moved legislative council amendments to House Bill 2649-1, 2, 3, and 4. Discussion on the amendments. Are there any objections to the amendments? They're adopted. Representative Bunn.
Mr. Chairman, I move the bill as amended to the full committee.
Representative Bunn moves the bill as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? I don't want to hear any discussion about sausage. All right. Clerk, call the roll.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Bunn?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye.
Kotetsky?
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your time, especially in the previous week where you had to sit here for 5 hours.
You're welcome. I might just suggest if your council could take a look at 2355, I believe, as that was a companion bill that our section did with the landlord-tenant bill 2628. And 2628 has gotten out, but somehow ours, I think, got lost in the shuffle there. And there were a couple of important things that bill did that everybody's in agreement on, that if we could get that one moving before it's too late, we'd like to try and do that. I just realized that today. So
oh,
okay.
Shouldn't be greedy, Mr. Grant. Shouldn't be greedy.
Right. Yeah, you're on a roll.
Thank sure. you very much.
Wants to come down here another day or two.
Right. I just love this.
So do we. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, moving right along. Sure. Representative Bond, I don't want to carry that bill on the floor.
I don't know how much fortitude
it takes me to sit here. We return to our hearing on Senate Bill 14. Have some folks came here from a variety of places in the state. We're to Miss Linda Allen, Jefferson County.
Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Linda Allen. I'm Director of the Jefferson County Health Department and the County Registrar of Vital Statistics. I'm here today on behalf of Jefferson County and the Conference of Local Health Officials. We support the amendment to Senate Bill 14 as presented by Mr. Ricard, allowing county registrars to retain copies of birth and death certificates filed within their county.
Representative Peterson?
Is a county registrar the same as the county clerk? I don't know that term.
No. County registrars are delegated by the state registrar. In most counties, the registrar, county registrar, is located within the health department. The county clerk is an elected official.
So it's usually an official within the health department. And does every county have?
Every county has a registrar.
Thank you.
In fiscal year 84, my small county had 381 requests for records of vital statistics. Those were birth and death certificates. 229 of those requests resulted in direct services to the person requesting the certificate. The remaining 152, however, we were able to provide information only. The majority of those information contacts would probably have resulted in information and referral regardless. However, many of them, several of them, probably could have resulted in prompt service to the person requesting the copy if we'd had a copy of the certificate. Our local funeral home director has told me on several occasions that he frequently has requests from families for death certificates after we have already forwarded the certificate to the state health division. The wait then incurred by the families often means processing delays in their insurance benefits and other legal matters. Attorneys and physicians representing families have also relayed similar problems to me. New mothers can obtain certified copies of their child birth certificate provided they come into our office within a week after the filing. This short time period is a difficult problem for many women following the birth of a new baby. We have an Indian reservation in our jurisdiction. They must have a certified copy of the birth certificate immediately to enroll that infant within the tribe. They need this certificate as soon as possible for tribal benefits. If, however, they're unable to come into my office within a week of the filing, we have to refer them to the health division, and they then also incur the same delay that I described before in having to go through the vital records unit. Members of the Conference of Local Health Officials heard testimony by Christine Gebbie, administrator of the Oregon State Health Division, before the Public Safety Subcommittee in March on her need for increased vital records staff. The Health Division now has, as Mr. Ricard already told you, a 4 to 6 week turnaround time for issuing vital records. With increased staff, Mrs. Gebbie said that she could decrease that time to 2 weeks. If you pass this amendment, I can guarantee you that in Jefferson County, we will have a 15-minute turnaround time for people who walk in requesting copies of the record. For mail-in requests, we'll have a maximum turnaround time of 24 hours. We think that this is a service that's needed in our communities based upon the number of requests that we're getting.
Ms. Allen, so on the death certificate, so what happens is, I mean, those just aren't maintained at all in the county. You have to write to the state.
We have to turn them into the state. As a matter of fact, I attached to my testimony copies of what is kept at the county level. As you can see, it's a very, very incomplete record that we're allowed to keep. The abstract of death we keep forever. The abstract of birth we keep for 2 years. They're very incomplete. For most legal matters, they aren't what families, attorneys, and insurance companies want. The last two pages are the complete records that are forwarded to the state. As you can see, the information on them is much more complete than what we have at the county level. And this is usually the information that families, insurance companies, physicians, and attorneys are requesting.
Now, you have are your registrars, are they notary publics? Will they be notarizing that this certificate is official?
To give a certified copy, the copy has to have on the bottom of it that it is a certified copy issued by the county, has to be signed by a registrar or a deputy registrar, and has to have the county seal. Every county is assigned a seal.
Okay, and that will satisfy insurance companies and
yes, because
and
it is a legal document once it bears the county seal and says that it is a full and complete copy of the record.
Further questions? certainly want to thank you for driving over here, for providing written testimony, and these examples that really has helped us a lot.
Thank you.
Burton, do you have a question?
No, I don't think of Ms. Allen, but I'm wondering, is there someone else on it?
Yes, we have two more individuals.
Probably.
Health division.
Okay.
We have Mary Sorensen from Washington County.
Chairman Kopetsky, members of the committee, my name is Mary Sorensen. I'm the director of the Washington County Department of Public Health. I'm here today to represent the Conference of Local Health Officials that represents all the counties in the state of Oregon. We would like to support the amendment that was provided by Ricard that would allow the copies of vital statistics, both the birth and death records, to be maintained at the county level. We believe that this provides the kind of access to the citizens in our area cuts out some of the red tape and the weight that's involved with mailing to the state to get those records.
I don't know if this is an appropriate question for you, but has this been tried before? I'm a freshman. I'm first term around here.
We provide this service for the first 10 days that we're allowed to maintain the record in our office, after which point we're required to then submit that record to the State Health Division for final filing. What our amendment asks is that we're allowed to keep a certified copy. We will still forward the original, but we will then continue to be available and accessible to people, providing them with the copies that they need at the time they need them. We're only at this point allowed to make copies for them off of that original for about 10 to 14 days, after which time that original then is sent to the state.
Have you folks come before the legislature previously and asked for this type of statutory change? Did you have an opportunity to present this amendment on the Senate side on this bill?
I wasn't a party to it.
No. Okay. Representative Burton?
Well, I'm not sure, but maybe I should have asked this question to the maker of the amendment, or maybe to all three of you. I need some orientation here. I had to step out of the room, and I'm not sure. As I read the bill as it's written, it would appear to me that the attempt that's being made here, and maybe we'll hear from somebody from the Department of Veterans Affairs, is to be able to access from the state registrar certified copies. And what they're really trying to do is make it available to the Federal Veterans Administration, to the Director of the Veterans Affairs, or any county service officer appointed under 408-410. It seems to me like what you're talking about here is your accessibility of your records to the general public, which I certainly would assume we ought to leave down at the most local possible level. And I agree with everything you're saying, but it would appear to me that the bill addresses a slightly different question, and it's the accessibility of those records to certain governmental agents and officers at the state level. Is that my misinterpreting Senate Bill 14?
We would like to have, Representative Burton, we do want to have this available for the general public. However, when the county service officer for Veterans Affairs is in my courthouse, which one floor up from me, if he requests a certified copy for a veteran that he is trying to help obtain benefits, get through the system, he cannot get that copy from me at the current time, even though he is in the building with me.
That's
so I think it would be addressing both problems.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, let me get a better understanding then about how that, I think that's something I didn't understand. Because my point would be that the veteran service officer in your area should be able to get that from you, but also if that person happened to be in Salem doing some work
on something at the department should also be able to get it here. I mean, is it?
Yeah.
Is there anything that would prohibit that individual from getting it in both? Is there some way we can have it in both places, or do you only get? What you're saying is certified copies should only come out of one source.
No. What I am saying is that currently certified copies can come from the counties for 10 days. After that time, all certified
Excuse me,
copies
back
from
up.
The state
can come from
now,
birth or death. There's
birth
or
death.
Death. They hold it for 10 or 15.
And we hold them for 10 days.
Thank you. Good.
What this amendment would do would it would allow, to use your example, the county service officer, if he was in Jefferson County, he could obtain it directly from Jefferson County. If he was in Salem, the state health division would still have the original copy, and he could also obtain it from the state.
So is there any real conflict? Your amendment, I